I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's showtime! Welcome to episode number 152 of Better Podcasting. On this show, we cover some common podcasting mistakes.
Whoa, man, not so fast. Not so fast. In this week's Better Podcasting Download, we take a deep dive into Apple Podcast categories, courtesy of Pacific Content.
And finally, in this week's Better Pod Back, we talk about the bane of multiple social media accounts.
Lauren, start the show whenever you want. I have the munchies. Do you have the munchies, SB?
No, Steven. No, I don't.
Welcome to Better Podcasting, a show where we talk about podcast tips, tools, and best practices to help you succeed with your podcast. What makes us different? Well, just like you, we podcast purely out of the love and fun of it. Podcasting is our hobby, and we recognize that it's yours too. We always encourage your questions and feedback, and you can find all of our contact information at betterpodcasting.com. Here's your host for the show, Stephen John Drew and Stargate Pioneer.
Welcome to episode 152 of Better Podcasting. I am Stephen John Drew, and joining me, of course, is the one and only Stargate Pioneer.
And star is the right word, and what we're talking about is Star Wars. Star Wars Resistance is on, so if you like Star Wars, there is a new series on. It's for the kids, it really is, but if you're a Star Wars diehard, you might want to check it out. In the meantime, you might want to check out this podcast, because we're going to talk about a lot of the great common mistakes. But before we get to that, we're going to go over how I could have saved my podcast story. Now, we have a couple of stories that we tell at the beginning of the show. There's how I could have saved my podcast stories, and there is a how I did save my podcast story. So if you actually have an how I saved my podcast story, please get it into us, and we'll talk about it on the show. We know if you're a podcaster, you have saved your podcast somehow, so don't be shy. We know you have a story. We want to hear what it is. But this is the how I could have saved my podcast story that we're going to go over today. It was posted on Reddit in the podcasting subreddit by black_bird246. And the title was Changing Show Direction and Upping the Quality with Not Much Support from Co-host. The post goes on to say, I've been saying to my co-host lately that we need to up our quality, as our numbers for the past few months have almost been going down by half each month, 256 to 105 to 52. He has the attitude of, we aren't getting paid, so why worry so much? This is a hobby. We are a comics and pop culture podcast. It is a hobby, and I get that, but it seems to be affecting the content change or reluctance to doing it. I've asked for several times over for a new logo from him, and we are still waiting on the thumbnails for the last few months. I've suggested newer and more timely content to keep us relevant, but it's not really being well received. A few ideas have been met with, I think it'll fail horribly before trying it. Any suggestions? From a slightly frustrated podcaster. Steven, I know you have some ideas here, and I want to hear them.
Yeah, okay. So here's the tough part with this situation. When you're not getting the support from your co-host, I totally get that you're wanting to try to increase your quality of content. Absolutely, that's what you want to do if you're seeing a drop. Now, with that said, I should mention that there's the possibility that maybe whoever you're getting your stats through has changed something in their algorithm. So maybe you actually haven't dropped listeners. It's a consideration worth having. But for all intents and purposes, let's say that you are holding, you know, something's holding you back and you have to make the change. I think at this point, if you've tried to put it forward and you've been shot down, if you're the one that is actually in charge of that podcast, and that's the big key to this whole equation, is if you are the one, is you got to give the ultimatum. You got to say, look, this is what I want to do. I want to grow. I get that this is a hobby. It's fun for us. I am having fun. But one of the ways that I want to have fun is to grow, and this isn't satisfying my fun. And otherwise, if you're not the owner, then maybe you have to ask yourself, is it time to do your own project and move on? Because you've tried the polite way, you've tried to put it out there, you've been shot down, you got to get firm at this point. And if that's what you really want as a podcaster.
We both have had co-hosts before that were a little bit resistant to change for a variety of different reasons. Maybe the show was actually changing and they were okay with the original content and format, and that's what they wanted to stay with. Or maybe they just weren't receptive to changing, and you have to be sensitive to that. You have to understand where your co-host is coming from. And as Steven said, you have to make your decision. If you're okay with that, go on and continue. But I guarantee you, if you want to get better, if you want to get better quality, if you want to have a better podcast, then you're going to have to make some changes, whether that's with this existing co-host, starting your own project, or if you do own the project, get rid of that co-host and bring on somebody else or go solo to increase the quality of the show. So, yeah, absolutely. Hard decisions are in front of Mr. Blackbird 246. And if he actually hears this and anybody has any questions, please give us a thumbs up and give us a dial up or whatever, and we'll be glad to talk to him about it. But I sense that whatever was happening might have already happened. So we'll see if there's any updates from Mr. Blackbird in the future. But if you are in a situation like this, please take care of it, and either take care of it or be at peace with it and move on.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good thing to note here right now is some people are okay with this, right? Some people are absolutely okay with that and not worrying about numbers. And we're not saying that you have to worry about growing your show. If you are doing this as a hobby, you need to be having fun. And if that growth doesn't fall into the equation for you, then that doesn't fall into the equation for you. But obviously for this person, it seems to be. So definitely everybody's got to have their own agenda of what they want to get out of hobby podcasting. But let's go ahead and move on to common mistakes that podcasters make.
Anyone who has been a part of any podcast community will often see new podcasters asked the same sort of questions. But there are often similar mistakes that these podcasters make. And while you may not be a new podcaster, we actually think that this episode can still offer you an opportunity to think about what you're doing with your show and think about some areas you might be able to tweak as well, because the same mistakes that new podcasters make might be something that you're making as well. We're talking about common mistakes here, so these are just simple little tips to help you get through some little challenges that you're having. So we've binned it off into different buckets, so to speak. We're going to talk about startup, common mistakes in starting your podcast and recording your podcast and editing your show, and then finally publishing and promoting it. And then we'll go through a little miscellaneous at the end. But we're going to start off with how you can make some common mistakes while starting your show. And this is even before you record an episode. So the first thing that we're going to talk about, which is especially valid in fall of 2018, is that you have to choose a name for your show that is common and it is not vague. It is actually descriptive of your show. This is really, really important because you have to make sure that the name is not commonly used. You have to make sure that it's not too vague. You have to make sure that this name is discoverable. And what the issue that I'm talking about is Apple Podcasts in late 2018 is really constraining podcasters as to what they can put in their title tag. So this is the show title. This is also the episode title. And if you're keyword spamming those, then Apple Podcasts will actually boot you out. We've actually seen evidence of this over the past couple of weeks of just people that we talk to. The shows are no longer on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. They're like, what's up? Or maybe they don't even know. And we're telling them, hey, look, you're not there anymore. And they are obviously keyword stuffing. So the problem is, if you have a show title like Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., okay, what is that about? I don't understand. It's in the past, I've had a little disclaimer saying it's a Marvel Comic Universe fan show in brackets. Now I can't have that. So that's just an example. Maybe you want to say, I'm a Marvel fan podcast. That is the title of your show. So you have to be very descriptive about the title of your show. Steven, another area is about domains, and it's registering a domain. So if you're starting a podcast, we would actually advocate, whether you get a website or not, to get that domain, yourhobbypodcast.com. That's what the domain is, or URL, it's called. Whether or not you want to have a website, make sure you grab that. It's only $12 for a year if you get the normal common name one from Hover or Namecheap. And that would include privacy with that. So I would go ahead and do that, because you never know if you're going to want to start a website or if you want to use that to point people to your website, whether it's a website that you have through self-hosting or if it's a website that you have through your podcast media host provider. A domain is really necessary here. Now, this next one, Steven, you actually have some experience in this, so I'm going to let you talk about it.
Yeah, the next common mistake that people make is buying off of Fiverr. Okay, so now, yes, we realize that we've just sort of negatively talked about an entire big, we'll call it even borderline an industry. There's a whole bunch of stuff on Fiverr, but the reality is for podcasters who are looking for certain things from Fiverr, yes, it's very appealing to go to Fiverr because you can get some stuff for cheap. But why we say this is a common mistake is because often when you're starting and you want to be cheap, you end up getting into a situation where you might possibly get some legal trouble a little bit later. And why that can happen is because often these Fiverr artists will go and rip off different artwork or go take different things. And so then what ends up happening is they basically sell you someone else's property, and the legal action comes against you for using it. And I actually had my face stuffed onto some work before, allegedly because something to do with Fiverr. And that's a true story. Yeah, apparently I was sold on Fiverr, and this time it wasn't for my evening business.
This time, indeed. I will say, if you are starting a podcast and you have some money to throw somewhere, I wouldn't worry about music because you can always change that later. I would go through somewhere like incompetent.com or the YouTube Media Library, which has a lot of free music that you can actually use just to start off with. But if you have $50, $100, $150, I would throw that instead of music at artwork. Get an actual artist, don't use Fiverr, and you get yourself your actual logo, which you will own at that point. So make sure you do that.
Don't use Fiverr, but make sure you have your fiber.
Knew you were going to say that.
Go ahead and take the next one, because I know that this is something that I put in the show doc. I put this in the show doc and you personally disagree with it.
I don't disagree with it at all. It's buying a condenser microphone, especially like the Blue Yeti or whatever the new Yeti Nano is or whatever. They're not bad microphones. It's just that they're not really conducive for hobby podcasters. And we've mentioned this before, but we wanted to mention it again because it is so important. We think that the Samsung Q2U or the Audio-Technica ATR2100 or the Audio-Technica AT2005, that's the right way to go. A condenser might be tempting. There might be a lot of information out there that say this is the microphone to use because it's USB, but you're going to end up regretting it. You're going to try, if you have a hobby podcast and you want that one mic, the Snowball, the Yeti, whatever, you're going to want to try to do the two podcasters, one mic. No, don't do that. Everybody needs their own microphone. And also a condenser, just the way that it works, will be giving you much more ambient sounds, whether that's in the room or outside the building, whether that's a jet going overhead, a lawnmower, or somebody knocking over a chair in the room next to you. You're going to hear all that, and you're going to hear the echo and reverb with a condenser microphone. A dynamic cardioid microphone is the way to go. And those three microphones that I mentioned, the Samsung Q2U, the ATR2100, and the AT2005, they're all USB enabled. They all can do XLR as well simultaneously, but they're all USB. So they're every bit as good or better for a podcaster than a condenser microphone.
Absolutely. The next common startup mistake and this is one that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, is asking repeat questions in a podcast group without using the search feature. Okay, I'd be very remiss if I didn't mention this because this happens far too much. People go into a podcast group and they go, I'm starting a podcast. Can you tell me what exactly do I do? And it's just like, use a search. You'll find 1,000 other people who have asked that question. So if you are starting out, make sure that you avoid that mistake by using the search feature in the group. Now, that's not to say there's not a valid reason for asking a question again. Maybe it's been a long time since somebody's addressed, say, the question on what media host should I use? Okay, that you'll never find a time in your life where you'll have searched and there won't be a recent post. That's going to be there like every other day. But you might find like there maybe someone's talking about some starter microphones and the last post was 2 years ago. Absolutely. Something could have changed in the last 2 years. So make sure you use that search feature before you ask your question. Because my new thing that I just do, and I encourage everybody listening to do this, do the search. You see someone ask a question that you know have been asked 1,000 times? Do the search in the group. Grab the link to that search results and just paste it in as the reply. That's my new thing I do. And I don't expand. I just post, just copy paste. And that's the way I leave it.
If you're looking at tips on how to start your podcast, we would advocate going to Better Podcasting Episodes 1-6, in which that's a great roadmap on how to start your podcast. So aside from that, yeah, don't ask the repeat questions in the groups. Another thing that you want to avoid, another common mistake, is biting off more than you can chew and, quite frankly, not looking long term. And podcasting can be very intensive on its own. And it's worth considering, for example, whether media hosts will make that easier for you versus trying to set up your own self-hosting infrastructure and website. Now, on the flip side, if you do use a media host, not selecting the right host at the start can cause for more work in the long run. For example, if you start with SoundCloud, but all of a sudden that you realize that the statistics are fake and they're inflated, they're not IAB podcast guideline compliant, so therefore pretty much useless, you'll end up having to move later if that's something that's important to you. Or maybe you pick a media host that's based off of venture capitalist funding and only to find them go away with short notice again, and you'll have to do more work later importing your show from that media host to another. So for the record, we would recommend Podbean or Libsyn, but if you don't self-host, if you self-host, go to Better Podcasting Episode 65. You'll learn all about how to self-host for the best.
Next category that we have is recording. So you're set up and you're recording. What are some common mistakes that podcasters make when they record? Well, let's start off with the first one, which is not planning your show. It's important to have a plan for both your podcast as a whole, but also the individual episode. Yes, some podcasts are more ad-lib than others, but you should still have a working structure of what you want to accomplish within that episode. You gotta have it so that you can make sure that you stick to the plan and don't just end up having a big, long ramble fest. This happens far too much, and the best ramble fest that you can have is one that you don't record. That's my opinion. So definitely make sure that you plan out your show and have a plan of attack for each individual episode.
This is something that I've seen done a lot as well, and it's pre-recording too many episodes or tossing out or publishing too many episodes. It is important to put your best foot forward, but there's also obsessing about the quality. And some podcasters will re-record episodes over and over and over again, trying to be perfect. There's such a thing as good enough. Also, some podcasters think that they should have 30 podcasts in the can, quote unquote. While this can be good to have some podcasts in reserve, you don't want to delay constantly because you're just going to have too many episodes and you're not going to have good feedback, and you could change your whole direction of the show in the meantime. And then that would make the follow-on episodes useless. So you're going to have to restart all over again. You can do 1, 2, 3, maybe, but after that, you really need to start publishing those shows. And don't worry about the quality of the first few episodes, that you will get better. And people will discover your show later on anyway. And yes, that will go back to episode 1 to figure out how you started. But in the end, it's where you're at today that really matters.
For sure. The next recording thing that we've got is one that actually a lot of people don't think about when they don't do live situations, and it's not setting a schedule for your recording. Yes, obviously, like here at Better Podcasting, we record Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern every week, unless there's something weird that comes up. So that sticks us to a schedule. However, if you are not doing live, you still should try to get yourself a schedule for your recording. And the reason why is because it's going to sort of make all of your dominoes fall into place when you end up doing everything between recording and publishing. The consensus is you should try to stick to a routine publishing day. There's benefits that come with it. There's a lot of different documentation on the internet about this. So if you are not setting yourself a recording date, 1 week you might be having to record, edit, type show notes, do all of this in the course of a day. Other weeks you might be giving yourself 7 days. So it's really hard to get a routine. So set yourself a schedule for recording. It's amazing how many new podcasters and other just general podcasters that I know go, yeah, I got to get that out on Sunday. I guess I should probably record this today on Saturday. Make sure you set that schedule.
Another common mistake about recording is using copyrighted material during your recording, thinking that you can because of this thing called fair use. It's a legal term, fair use. And it's actually amazing how many podcasters, especially new ones, you constantly hear this. And they think they can get away with using copyrighted material under fair use because they're barely playing it. You know, I'm only doing 4 seconds. I'm only doing 6 seconds. It's really not worth it. You could get booted off or your host for it. I mean, they could get rid of the episode. They could boot your show, or worse, you could get sued over it. And everybody say, oh, fair use. Yeah, fair use. But fair use, if it's a legal defense, it could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. And people think we're making this up. We're not. It does happen. People, and this is entertainment law, and these are people with deep pockets. They will go after you because they think they can get the money and reclaim the attorney fees. So the attorneys themselves don't mind taking these cases on the sly or building up hours for it because they know eventually they're going to be paid for it. So yeah, this is something I would stay away from. I would not use any copyrighted material. I would not have anything that, you know, anything from a song to a TV show to whatever. Now, if you're doing a podcast on a TV show, you could probably take little clips of statements, and because you're talking about it, that is a definition of fair use. You're analyzing that specific little clip. But if you show too much, and it's something that they don't want out there, they could sue for it. So I would be very cautious of even doing that.
Absolutely. The next common mistake that we see podcasters make is we talk a lot here about having good quality sound, making everything seem really good to your audience and your potential audience. But a common mistake that podcasters make is believing that the audio needs to be perfect into the device that's recording it. Yes. You absolutely have to have a good signal. You got to make sure you don't have hiss. You're not going to be able to polish a turd or anything like that. I think that's a saying. If not, well, you know what? I'll just make it up now. But I do know that it's a saying. There's a whole Mythbusters episode on it. But honestly, you don't need to feel like everything that goes right into your recorder, if you're using that, or into Audacity, sounds perfect. You don't have to have all of this different equipment to process that signal before it's recorded, because some of this can be done in post-production. Now, don't take this as advice to, you know, not have a good signal, but take this more as you don't necessarily have to have a DBX 286S right away. Yes, we both have that SPNI, but there are ways to get around that if that's how you want to start, because some of this stuff can be done in post-production. And a fun fact on that is there are some audiophiles who actually advocate using the DBX 286 to separately capture the insert from there, which is basically just post preamp, but before all of the other things that it does, so that you can end up editing and manipulate that and process that in post production. So definitely there's things that you can do after. And I will tell you that the raw recording that I have sounds different than the posted recording every week.
While we're talking about audio sound, you do not need to try for that big radio voice sound. You know, the in a world where podcasting is made for hobbyists, or you don't have to do that. A lot of people ride the EQ so heavy on their sound mixers just because they think it adds a big boomy sound. I was one of them. I admit it. My first episode, my co-host slash producer Nightwing was like, dude, turn that down. And I refused to. I'm like, I want that big boomy voice. It just ended up muddling it. And I, editor SP years later, had to deal with that crap because I had to take all that bass off. I basically just clipped all the bass off and it sounds okay now. By the way, it's Starling Tribune episode one, if you want to go back and hear it. But man, that is just, wow. Oof, it sounds so muddy. Don't do it. Don't ride the bass. And unless you know what you're doing with that EQ, just keep them all centered and you can deal with it in post, like Steven just said.
Now, one thing that we'll talk about when we're talking about equipment is making sure that you actually test equipment before recording. It's amazing how many people make this mistake of not actually testing their equipment before they start recording. I have seen multiple people on different podcast groups post saying, hey, I have an interview tomorrow. It's all lined up. How do I record Skype? And it's like, no. You test this before you line up the interview. The same thing goes with any equipment that you're using. You should be testing out your microphone. You should be testing out the recorder. You should be playing that back. How does it sound? Is it okay? Am I getting hum? Am I getting buzz? Am I having a whole bunch of things just go wrong and it sounds like garbage? Test your stuff before you record, because a lot of people make this mistake and they just go right into it and they're very unhappy with the results.
The final recording tip that we're going to talk about a common mistake, is not having a backup. It's amazing how many podcasters, they get really upset because they lost a recording. And it's, once you lose a recording, there is nothing you can do, because I can't work with a recording and try to EQ it in Audacity or in Audition or whatever editing program you're using, Reaper. I can't do anything with it if it's not there. So make sure you have a backup. And I will tell you, the last four Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., I've been having to use a backup because of a recording issue that's been ongoing with one of my co-hosts, and we're trying to get it solved. But the last four that have been released have all been backup recordings. So I've talked about it before as, you know, how I save my podcast story last episode, so I won't go over it again. But having backups is so important, because those are shows that I'm glad I was able to get out, and I know our audience really enjoyed them. If I didn't have that backup recording, I wouldn't have been able to, because it would have just been me and one or two of the other co-hosts. It wouldn't have been all four of us, and try to edit a show where one of the co-hosts' audio is not there. It's impossible. You can't do it. So
like I said last week, you could just dub it in, SP.
Yeah. By the way, this is how you do get a successful How I Save My Podcast Stories. You back up your recordings.
All right, so moving on to the editing side of things. It's, you know, one thing to put out a good show. It's another to edit it so obsessively that it doesn't sound natural. And a lot of podcasters fall victim to this and they end up just over editing their show. Now, people who often spend time over editing end up realizing later that there's very little payoff to that. We're not saying that it should sound terrible, but what we're saying is if you go there and you just make it sound so unnatural by over editing, you're probably going to find the payoff isn't that great. And if you were to put out something that just has a moderate amount of editing rather than an extreme, you have the same end results. So definitely watch the over editing when it comes to editing. A great example of that would be maybe the truncate silence feature. It's great for taking out 5-second pauses, but it can get dicey, especially for a solo podcast, if you take it like, say, under a second. So definitely watch over editing your show.
Another common mistake that we hear in editing phase is poor audio balancing. You know, it's important to have that podcast that is listenable without having to constantly adjust the volume knob. And there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, put away all the loudness standards out there. The key part is that the audio is overall level throughout the whole episode, and it's the same loudness. Unless you're doing an audio drama where you're trying to get quiet and loud, just keep it at the constant volume. And that way you don't have other effects drowning out the speaker, and you have a nice consistent voice that is throughout the show. Now, this can happen in one of two ways. One co-host can be softer than the other. So that's one of the benefits of either using a compressor or multi-tracking. So you can differentiate the two tracks and go ahead and edit them or compress them differently. And then also it happens when you're fiddling with the volume knobs during your recording. I mean, with a H6, it's manual, you can do it. But if you go into software and you change somebody's volume throughout the recording, and it either gets softer or louder throughout the recording, that could end up with either blowing out somebody's ears at the end, or they're not hearing it anymore at the end, and you have to continually change the volume. A lot of people are working out. A lot of people are doing stuff where they can't fiddle with the volume knob while they're listening. They're like putting on a podcast and just listening to it as they do other things. So that is why it is so important to have a consistent volume level or loudness level throughout your show.
I actually just heard a podcast the other day that they started their ending music and I couldn't hear what they were saying over it. It was just too loud. So yeah, you definitely got to watch that. Now, we talked about over-editing things, but on the flip side, not editing enough can be a common mistake, like leaving in coughs, desk bangs, other distractions. Try to avoid distracting your audience. It's not really that funny to hear you say every 2 minutes, oh, I should really edit this out. I hear podcasters do that a lot, and it's distracting. You know, one time sometimes as a comedic effect might work on some shows, but if you're actually saying that and you're genuinely meaning that and you're leaving that in, it might be time to edit it out.
Yeah, I was just listening to a podcast the other week where the main host was like, yeah, we can go ahead and edit that out in post. And the producer who was on as a guest host came on and said, no, I'm leaving that in. That's not good. So that was done once during the entire show. If that was done several times throughout the show, that would have been really annoying for me. So, yep. And on the other hand, what you can do, a common mistake, is you can actually take out too much noise. As we talked about before with the truncate silence, you can overdo that. You can overdo the noise removal tool in Audacity or whatever noise removal tool you're using. And once or twice is fine as long as you're not overdoing it for those two times. It's not a magic tool. It's not going to completely crystal clear. It's not Hollywood, right? You see all these movies or TV shows where people go in and they spend 5 seconds tweaking the audio and bingo, it's crystal clear. I'm sorry. That takes a lot of intense processing, something that's not available to you in the software, that's not available to you as a hobbyist. And it takes a long time to do. So what you're going to be able to accomplish as a hobbyist is lightly cleaning up your audio. You're not going to be able to edit out those. Like if you're in a coffee shop on the street, on the sidewalk, and you got a bunch of buses and stuff going by, you're not going to be able to edit that out. That is noise that's going to overpower your audio.
You know, a fun exercise for people who are really worried about like hiss and noise and things like that is to check out a sort of just middle of the road TV show using some headphones. It is amazing how many TV shows that are out there that you can actually hear hiss when you do that. I've also actually heard some clear redubbing on high budget movies and whatnot as well. So even the big guys don't get it right. So don't feel like just because you have a little tiny bit of hiss in your track, it's the end of the world. You're a podcast, okay? You're a podcast. And the last thing that we've got with editing is saving your file in a very low bitrate. Now, 64 kilobits per second mono is sort of a standard that people have made acceptable. It's arguably not that great of information because as a society, we've really improved our listener ability and we have a lot better equipment available. We did a whole episode actually on that, and I'm a big advocate person myself that 64 kilobits per second mono is actually not good enough. I can hear the difference between 64 and 96, but with that said, treat that as your minimum, because if you encode less than that, it's gonna sound poor, and if you do 64 kilobits per second stereo, it's gonna sound god awful.
I'll give you it's not a bitrate example, but I'll give you an example of how poor audio can take somebody out. So I was watching the season premiere of Supergirl, and there's a scene where Kara Danvers is in the elevator with like the younger version of her, not her, but like a young reporter at Catco, and they're in the elevator and their audio is just fine. And then all of a sudden you can tell they changed audio source. So either they ADR'd a little bit of it or they used another audio source and then they switched audio source, you can clearly, if you want to hear what reverb is, it is in the elevator scene in the Supergirl premiere. You will know what I'm talking about. It really bothered me because it went from crystal clear audio to like really hollow, distant audio, and then back to crystal clear once they got out of the elevator. So I'm like, what the heck happened there? If I was a TV producer, I would not let that out of my show. And that's probably why I'm not a TV producer, because there's no way I could get those episodes out in 8 days.
No, and it happens a lot. And that was the point that I was making. So definitely, you know, that's really a testament to over-editing and why sometimes we just obsess as podcasters and we don't need to. Now, in the publishing and promoting category, what we're going to start off with is saying that one of the common mistakes that people make here is stuffing too much into their notes, where the notes basically become impractical or unreadable. Now, you got to watch what you put in there, because you don't want there to be so little that it's not being picked up by search engines, but you also don't want it to be a novel where people aren't able to actually use them. So you got to find that right balance for your show. It's going to vary from show to show, but you want to make sure that you aren't just putting like a whole bunch of stuff in there that Google gets confused and your listeners get confused.
You want to stay, this is another common mistake that we see a lot of times, not just with your show notes, but with posts on social media, using affiliate links without disclosing who you are or how it's going to benefit you, or using excessive links. If you heard us talk about affiliate links every 2 seconds on this show, I guarantee you as a listener would be like, nah, no thanks. I don't want anything to do with these guys. I'm getting more affiliate links than I am actual useful tips for my podcast. So you want to stay away from that. And if you do use affiliate links, make sure you disclose by whatever rules of the organization and legal rules for your country of origin is that you are using the affiliate links appropriately. Like if we were going to use an affiliate link here on Better Podcasting, we would say this is an affiliate link. It will help us out a little bit if you use it, but we also endorse this product or service.
And the last thing in the publishing and promotion area that we've got is spamming. A lot of podcasters make this common mistake where they end up just spamming everywhere with their show. Now, it's one thing to have a focused marketing strategy or a promotion strategy. It's just another to blast it everywhere. It's sort of counterproductive to what you want to accomplish, because the reality is if a bunch of people see you posting the same spammy post across 10 different communities, they're probably going to check you out and go, oh, they're just a spammer, and think of you as maybe not even somebody who's actually doing a podcast. They might actually just think of you as somebody who is hired from a country that likes to spam. Or you might also have a podcaster who commonly goes to podcast support groups to use them as an advertising service. That's another common mistake that podcasters make. A lot of times this is trying to be hidden in I just recorded my first episode. If anybody has any great feedback on that, it'd be appreciated. And then they never respond back to that thread.
Yeah, never see him again. No big deal. And I do understand the value for feedback. I get that. But check out the rules of what our group form service that you're using before you go ahead and do that. Because if you go ahead and do that and it's not really allowed, then people are just going to be, it's spam, and I'm not going to pay any attention to that. Plus, as a podcaster, you're busy because you're generally doing something in addition to your full-time job and your full-time life. Outside of that, you don't really have a lot of time to go listen to every first episode out there. I mean, I actually would love to and do that for a job, but you'd have to pay me a lot of money to do it. So, you know, it's not going to actually be possible. I'm sorry, guys. It's not. There are some forms that are set up for that, and there are people that actually go in and review you at, just as a common courtesy, say, hey, look, I want to help other people, just like we do Better Podcasts. We want to help other people. So there are places for that, just not in general podcast groups. Sorry. So there are some miscellaneous stuff that don't really fit in any of the categories solely that we talked about before, one of which we have talked about before on this podcast, and that's has a little bit to do with an acronym that we like to call GAS, or Gear Acquisition Syndrome. And basically what we're talking about is buying too much gear when you really don't need it. You know, it's amazing how some podcasters will buy gear just because they think it's the next step. Hey, look, I'm podcasting now and I've decided to do this full time. I really need a mixer. Well, how were you recording it before? Well, I use an Audio-Technica AT2005. My co-host uses an Audio-Technica ATR2100 from his house across town. We record using Audacity or using our Zoom H5 devices. And yeah, that's great. And that's all we do. We mix in our music later. So why are you buying a mixer? Well, I don't know. I just thought it would improve my sound quality or whatever. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. And it complicates. Now, it might enable you to do live later and mix in live music later. So if you're learning for that purpose, yeah, a mixer is fine. But maybe a mixer isn't what you need. Maybe you really need an audio interface. It's just a slight distinction. One is actually for mixing sound, and one is for funneling sound into your computer. So here at Better Podcasting, full disclosure, if you haven't figured it out already, we do have a lot of gear, but we actually have practical uses for all of it, or we use it as educational purposes for our shows.
And the last piece of advice that we've got for you is making excuses. Podcasters fall victim to this all the time. They make excuses, whether it's for not recording or for not launching or for being okay with poor audio. Excuses are going to cause you problems. And if you find yourself excusing yourself for every single thing to do with your podcast, whether it's not launching or it's putting out garbage, try to avoid that. Excuses will definitely ruin your podcast.
If you happen to have a common mistake that we have not covered, go ahead and hit us up with it. You can catch us at BetterPod on Twitter, or podcast@betterpodcasting.com is our email, or you can catch Steven on our Facebook page, facebook.com/betterpodcasting, and let us know what it is and we will talk about it on a future show.
But let's go ahead and move on to the Better Podcasting download. Here we go.
Welcome to this week's Better Podcasting download.
So in the past week or so, we had an article come out on Pacific Content. Pacific Content, by the way, is where all that great Google renovation content came out a few months ago, where we found out all about the Google app and how good it was going to be. Well, they have continued to produce new content. This article is by Dan Misner, and he had an article titled, "These are the most crowded categories in Apple Podcasts." You take a look at this article. Oh my gosh. Some of these content categories within Apple, they are just amazing how crowded they are. The crowdest by show. So he actually categories by different versions, results by shows, result by episodes, and results by episodes per series. And the main or the primary category in Apple Podcasts or iTunes. And he analyzed 390,000 shows, which is more than half the shows that Apple has said that they have in their directory. The most common one is religion and spirituality, Christianity. Then the next common one is music. And the next common one is comedy. And you go down, I would say the first like hobby podcast besides music would probably be TV and film. That's number five. But as you get down further and further, you get more categories that aren't as crowded, such as art, design, arts, food, education, K through 12. So if you really want to stand out in the crowd, this is what the article is advocating, you should choose one of those less crowded categories and you will have more of a chance to be discoverable. I think if you have a passion for a topic, that will determine what category you're going into. But that is just how I think about it. Some other people are like, I want to be known as a podcaster. How do I get known as a podcaster? Well, this is one way to get known.
Yeah. So when you ended up sending this to me, I'll be honest, I kind of questioned what the relevance was of this article, but I guess it does provide some good insight and whatnot into the directory. I think that a lot of times we take the directory for granted, but we don't know why. Why do we find it important? So,
well, when you're setting up your RSS feed, at least in Libsyn, I know that you can choose three categories. There's a prime category, there's a secondary, and a tertiary. And I have done intense views and to other RSS feeds in each of those genres, like the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, the Starling Tribune. I'm looking at other podcasts in that category, and I'm like, okay, what categories are they in? Because I want to be where they are so I can be found along with them. I don't want to be somewhere else where people aren't looking for them. So that is something that you can do as well, is take a look at RSS feeds in shows that you know you're going to be slightly in their same niche and find out which categories to use. That's a tip that you can take. On the other hand, I mean, there's a lot of podcasts out there. You're going to probably be in competition for listeners along the way. This doesn't necessarily mean you're in direct competition, because your take and your way of producing content is probably different than everybody else. And that's the reason why you're starting the show anyway. So I think you're fine there. But just know that if you're going to start one of these there's a ton of podcasts in some of these categories, and trying to be noticed in them might be more difficult than others.
Yeah. And that was sort of the point that I was getting to, actually, was because when you look at this, right, it is a statistically relevant directory because it's Apple Podcasts. And so when you actually look at these top categories of which ones are the most crowded, you can kind of get an idea on the space, the podcast space that's crowded. Like, yes, obviously the Apple Podcast doesn't represent everything to do with podcasting, but it's a great sample size and will tell you maybe the great unique idea that you have is not actually that unique, because you can start to poke around the category that sort of best represents that show idea. So that's sort of where I was going with my interest in this article. And I think it's definitely worth a read. And if you want, you can head on over to betterpodcasting.com/152. And we will make sure that there is a link to this in there. SP, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on this?
It's just another data point along the way. We constantly try to keep abreast of what's going on in the industry. I won't say this is an industry shift. This has been going on for quite some time. Matter of fact, the article even alludes to a previous study that was done in 2015, which was a similar analysis of the then iTunes directory. So it's nothing new here. It's just something to go, hey, this is a stat that tells me how many shows are in each category. It also could indicate interest in each category. Like, if there is that many shows in a certain category, there's obviously a lot of listeners for that category too, you would think. So it's something to pay attention to.
Absolutely. If you got feedback about this, please get in touch with us through any of the ways. Head on over to betterpodcasting.com to find that. But let's go ahead and find out what feedback you did give us this week. We had some interesting feedback come our way this week, including, of course, the usual place of Twitter, but we had a couple of interesting emails as well. But before we get to said emails, let's talk about the tweets. And one of the tweets was a wonderful poll that my co-host here, Stargate Pioneer, posted. He said, do you read tweets that are cross-posted from other social media accounts? And the answers that we had were three. We had the option A was, I love to read cross-posts. Option B was, cross-posts waste my time. And option C was other brackets reply with answer end bracket.
We had 42% of our respondents say that they love to read cross posts. So obviously not my cup of tea. 33% said cross posts waste my time, and 25% said other. And some of the replies were, yeah, I do both. And sometimes it annoys me, sometimes not. I think it has to do with where that cutoff is, specifically on Twitter, because Twitter has the smallest character availability for the post. So you will often see 140, 150, 200 characters, whatever it is, before it starts the URL. And it will just start to get into a thought, and then bingo, it will show the link back to Instagram, back to Facebook, wherever else it's cross-posting from. I'm like, that just frustrates me. So as I see more and more cross-posts, first of all, that tells me you're not on this platform. You are on another platform. And if that's the case, I don't want to follow you on this platform that you're not on. Because even if I respond to you, are you going to be around to respond back to me? And then, as well, it just shows a lack of engagement. It shows me you don't have the time to post that same picture on Twitter with the same message. You actually have to cross-post it to make sure that all your information is going to all of the platforms all the time. Just me personally, it bugs me.
I agree. I get frustrated with it. I actually see some people cross-post stuff to Facebook from like Twitter. So Facebook, come on, Facebook's got more characters. Like, use them. I don't want to see it linked more on Facebook. So annoying. What was the next tweet that we had here, SP?
We had a tweet from @WinKellyCharles. She said, I was listening to starting a new podcast and I am on Simplecast. And I like it, but I could see Blueberry is a better, and she ended right there. I would say that from better podcasting standpoint, we would recommend Libsyn or Podbean. There are reasons that we do not choose other to recommend. Libsyn and Podbean are the two that we would recommend.
Agreed. And in any case, though, Simplecast is great to see people testing it out, but we don't think it's there yet. I'll give you a little insider information. Simplecast is not who I'm referring to, but I am currently testing another platform. Again, I'll say retesting another platform in recent with the Gonna Geek Show. So you can easily find out what that is by going and downloading an episode. There's my plug.
We would love to have additional options available that we could recommend, but right now we don't. It's just as of right now, as of us recording this podcast, Podbean and Libsyn are it. But we are constantly looking at others saying, can we recommend them as well?
Yes. The only, actually, I should correct that statement. The only third option that we do recommend here is mailing Stargate Pioneer a CD or a stack of CDs for him to hand out. That's the only other method that we recommend.
Yeah, why don't you self-host instead?
We also got a couple of emails. First off, from Josh Liston, which you can find on the Gonna Geek Network on the Bubble Podcast. Josh Liston said, good day, fellows. A quick question. Re-audio processing for live streams. I was wondering if you guys ever thought about running audio processing on the Spreaker or Twitter audio streams before it goes out, and or running processing on the audio for the video stream. I recall watching an IAIB spotlight a few years back, and Andrew Zarian mentioned he was running some light processing on the stream itself as it went out. From memory, it was on an Omnia processor of some kind, and Andrew's audio is, in my humble opinion, the best live audio I've heard on the internet. Best, Josh Liston. So Josh, you know, you raise a good point about processing audio, and I'll be honest, Andrew Zarian, if you go to GFQ Network, gfqnetwork.com, we're actually listed on the GFQ Network. You can see us over there. He does have some good sounding audio, and the reason being is because he has some pretty good processing equipment. If you check out the studio tour, you can see that. With that said, audio processing on live streams is definitely possible. I will admit I used to do a better job of that on this show and Gonna Geek Show than I do now, because I used to run all of my individual participants through Behringer MDX4600, which offered some compression as well as some gating. If you've ever used Skype, you will have noticed that if you go and you ask that participant to hit mute on their end, you still hear hiss. Skype, for some reason, adds hiss to the communication, and I don't know what it is. And so the nice thing about using the MDX4600 was, again, audio levels, it compressed, but it also gated, so it got rid of that hiss when somebody wasn't talking. So absolutely, processing can be done on the cheap. The other thing that I did for a little while but ran into a couple of weird quirks was I used the voice meter banana. I used that software for a while, which ended up actually allowing me to, the virtual sound card allowed me to add some compression to the whole stream, and it made a difference. It sounded phenomenal. We had some people actually live comment on how good SP sounded compared to usual, and it was just because of that. I've been thinking for a while I might re-add it back in, so I might do that, and I don't need to do it with an Omnia processor.
Steven, you and I were actually talking about using the voice meter banana, and one of the things that you needed to check out again was that the software ended up crashing at some point in time, and that's why you stopped using it. And that is a disclaimer that I just want to throw out to our audience, is that voice meter banana might crash on you, and I don't know if it's a hardware thing or a software thing. I don't use it myself. I will also point out that the effects that we're throwing on our live audio, it's all hardware based right now. We're doing the DBXs or the Behringer compressors. We both got both. And that is how we would modify our audio going out. I guess I could fiddle with the volume or the gain on each channel through my Zoom H6 as the audio goes out to Spreaker and to Periscope. But it's not being compressed. It's not being EQ'd or anything. That's just a volume issue. So yeah, those are some things that we do. We use hardware. We don't use software.
Absolutely. And the last email that we got was from Johnny Pennington, loyal listener, Johnny Pennington. SP, go ahead and read his email out.
Gotta, you know, get the vocal cords lined up for our favorite listener, Johnny Pennington. Hey guys, I know you sometimes post podcasting gear deals. I just got this email from Sweetwater a few minutes ago, the Blue Encore 100, 2-for-1 deal. You might want to pass it on. Thanks, Johnny Pennington.
Johnny, thanks so much for sending that in. Yeah, the Blue Encore 100, we've talked about it on here before. We like it. We think that it's a reasonable sounding microphone. It's not necessary for everybody's voice, but we quite liked it. And these deals do come up a couple times a year. So if you're thinking that you might need a couple, it's often worth waiting for that deal to come up if you can, because yeah, the 2-for-1 deal does come up a couple times a year.
I did buy my Blue Encore 100 on a 2-for-1 deal and sent the other one to a co-host that I had at the time, Shannon, on Voices of Defiance, which she loved it and still uses it to this day, apparently, that in the AT2005 that I sent her. So yeah, she likes her microphones. She's a microphone snob, I guess. I created a monster down there. But yeah, the Blue Encore 100 2-for-1 deal is worth it. Thank you, Johnny Pennington, for pointing that out.
Absolutely. But that is going to take us to the end of the show. Before we wrap up, we'll remind you that we're part of the Gunna Geek Network. If you have a geeky podcast and you think that you would be a good fit for the Gunna Geek Network, head to gunnageek.com/join. We do have an application process, and we would love to hear from you. But for episode 152 of Better Podcasting, I'm Stephen John Drew saying this pie says to bake for an hour for 400 degrees. I put it on my computer. I think it's about ready. I think it's about ready. Is it?
And I'm SP saying I do not have the munchies. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Better Podcasting. We want to hear from you. You can find all of our contact information at betterpodcasting.com. If you like the show, please consider giving us a 5-star review in iTunes. We encourage you to check out all of the other geeky podcasts available at gunnageeknetwork.com. This has been a Gunna Geek production. Thanks for listening, and we will see you again next week.